I'm Sean.
And I'm Mike. And you're listening to
Sean and Mike Take a Hike.
Welcome to another episode of Sean and Mike Take a Hike. What do you want to talk about today, Mike?
Today we could talk about some hazardous plants or poisonous plants, things to look out for on the trail that may cause discomfort or illness.
Yeah, discomfort or illness or like lots of bad stuff, really.
Yeah, up to and including.
this is another one of those where like, I'm not positive audio format is the best way to like help people identify these plants.
Yeah, this might be a little bit heavy on the do your own research. We'll give you names and some like basic descriptions, but for actual visuals and things like that, I'd suggest looking it up and making sure you know exactly what things look like before you head out on the trail.
100%. I'm going to recommend, like, look up which of these plants that we're going to talk about today are in the area that you're going to be hiking in or potentially in the area that you're hiking in. And then, you know, like Mike said, we're going to do our best to describe, like, generally what they look like. But, you know, visual identification is a big thing when we're talking about this sort of stuff. So, you know, look it up on Google before you go. Save a picture to your phone or something if you need to. If you happen to have cell signal, okay, that'll be helpful because you could actually in real time look stuff up. But like we always say, you can't always count on cell signal where you're going hiking.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of us go into the backcountry for a reason. It's to get away from some of that stuff. So don't always count on it. So maybe download a picture, save a picture, something like that, so you know what you're getting yourself into.
And so this is your topic, Mike. I guess where do you want to start?
Well, I guess we can do a quick rundown of the plants that I was looking up that are most common for our area, which I mean, listeners that have reached out are also around our area, so it's kind of cool to know that we're reaching some local people. So I figured we could do a quick rundown of what we're going to talk about and then go through a little bit more of a description of all of them.
Okay.
If that works for you. Like, I've got seven on my list. I don't know how many you have.
I'll be honest, I didn't number my list, so I don't know exactly how many I have, but I have my list broken into a couple of different categories.
Okay.
So we can get to it, but mine is broken into like, hazardous plants like to come in contact with. And then I have a section about hazardous berries.
Okay, see, I didn't get into berries. I just went into, like, the touch and ingestion type. Well, I guess ingestion, but, like, mine isn't a berry. It's more
that's
of a plant.
The thing. Well, yeah. So, like, I just know, like, as we have been out on trails and on our hikes and stuff, you and I will sometimes come across various wild berries and stuff. And yeah. I'll be honest, I'm not super good at knowing what is edible berries and what is not edible berries. So I just err on the side of like, I'm just not going to eat any of them.
Right.
But I've also seen like people out there picking wild berries and eating them, which, you know,
good
if
on
you're
you.
Into doing that, good for you. If you know the difference, good for you. But I thought we could touch on that too. So let's maybe go through your list first.
Okay, me being a meatitarian, I did not think to look up the berries I could and could not eat.
Yeah, I totally figured that was going to be something that was not on your list, but I'm like, you know, I'm not a meatitarian, I'm a vegetarian. And so like realistically, it would be something that I was into if I was confident in my abilities to identify the various things. I'm not confident in my abilities. So like I just by default, I'm like, yeah, I'm just not even going to chance it, right?
Right. Yeah, like these survivalist shows and stuff that I watch, they're like, oh, this is this berry or this is this, you know, nut or whatever. And they're like, this one's poisonous. So I'm going to stay the hell away from that or whatever. I'm like, how the hell do these people know this shit?
Right. A, how do they know that? Well, and if I'm being totally honest and transparent, the other reason I kind of stay away from berries, like, aside from the fact that I just don't know which ones I'm allowed to eat and which ones I'm not allowed to eat, is I don't know if out on the trail is the time for me to get adventurous with the things I'm ingesting. From a pooping in the woods standpoint.
Right. Yeah. It's not necessarily the time to be experimental with your foods.
That's kind of what I think. Like, even some of the, like, you know, hiker meals that we've taken, some of the more adventurous on the white person spicy scale have turned out to be not a great idea for me personally. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't feel like this is the time for me to get adventurous with what I'm ingesting. Okay. So,
all right.
So let's start with your list. Do you want to like run down the list and then we can talk about them? And then after that, we'll move on to mine.
So I will leave out the ingestion one for your list, since that'll be more of the don't eat it type thing. Well, I guess all of these are definitely don't eat it. If you're not supposed to touch it, don't eat it.
Right.
Definitely don't eat it. But I've got, so the six on this list that I have, I've got the poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac. I've got stinging nettle, which I had never heard of, wild parsnip, giant hogweed, which I had also never heard of, and those are those six. The seventh one is on my ingestion list. So
the only one of those that I don't know of is the giant hogweed, which I did do some research on that because that came up on the research that I was doing, too. I'm surprised you don't know about the stinging nettles one, because we don't for sure have those around. I've had the bad fortune of brushing up against that before.
Oh, no kidding.
No bueno. Not a good time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's start with that one, I guess, since we're talking about that one. So for anybody that doesn't know about stinging nettles, it's like this, I'm going to say it's a weed looking thing. It's got like serrated leaves, which again, go on Google and search and see if it's even in your area, and then like try to identify it visually.
Oh, I've definitely seen those. Yeah, I'm Googling a picture of it now. I've definitely seen it.
Yeah,
I just never brushed up against it and didn't know what it was. Okay,
so it's got on these leaves, it's got these little hairs, which I'm guessing must be called nettles. I guess I didn't actually look up and see what part of it.
Those are the stingers,
the nettle part. But like those little hairs on the leaf, if you brush up against it, it like they stick. Like I don't know if they have barbs. I've never looked at it under a microscope, so I don't know exactly how they stick into you. I don't know if they're just sharp or what it is. But if they get into your skin, it like. For me, my experience is that it itches really bad. Other people describe it as burning. I don't personally describe it as burning. For me, it's just like a wicked itch that you can't get rid of, because like you kind of have to get rid of the barbs.
Right. It's almost like getting like a, go away. Like fiberglass insulation under your skin. It
kind of sort of like that. Yes. It's like getting insulation or fiberglass into your skin, and it's super hard to see because these super little hair things are practically transparent in color, and like once they're in there, pardon my language, but you're kind of fucked. So I mean, to the best of your ability, don't brush up against it.
Right.
Commonly found in moist, shady areas around creeks and marshes, like that type of setting.
Mm-hmm.
Or like under trees in the shade where it's like damper and stuff like that. But yeah, they're out there. I mean, and if you rub up against it.
Yeah. And it's not like it's a short plant. They range from what I'm seeing, 2 to 5 is the average, but they can get up to as tall as 8 feet tall.
Okay. I can't say I've ever seen one 8 feet tall.
Yeah, okay.
The 2 to 5 range I for sure have seen, and that's what I have ran into. Can't say I've seen one as high as 8 feet, but like, sure, you know, stuff can get big. Why not? I'll believe it. Do we want to talk about like ways to prevent exposure to stuff as we're going?
I mean, they're probably all going to have very similar prevention tips. I mean, we could run through that real quick now since we brought it up if you want to.
Well, so I had put a note like underneath each of these plants, and you're right. I mean, a lot of it does repeat.
Okay.
This one specifically, I kind of want to bring up because one of the things that I read it's going to make you chuckle, Mike. I know it's probably, if anybody's been listening for a long time, they're probably going to chuckle also. But one of the things that it said was to use trekking poles to clear the path in front of you.
So we found a use.
We found a use. So fair enough. For anybody that doesn't know about Mike and I's backstory with trekking poles, we've got a whole episode on it. Go back and listen to our back catalog. We've got a whole episode on trekking poles. But then it does also say, I put a note in here that if you do happen to run up against it, and maybe let's kind of recap this at the end too, for like things to keep in your first aid kit, specifically around this sort of stuff. But one of the things that it does say that can help provide relief if you do happen to find yourself in a situation where you've got these stingers in your skin, anti-itch cream can actually help with that, like, okay, itching sensation. So that is one thing that you and I do not typically take.
Which is surprising because we're out in nature. I thought we did, like, some kind of cortisone cream or something like that.
I do think we take hydrocortisone off-brand, cream. I do think we take that. I would have to double check.
That would be very weird if we didn't, because, I mean, if you got a bad mosquito bite or, you know, fall into one of these plants or whatever, then, yeah, we definitely should add that if we don't have it in there already. So
I will double check before we go out again.
So here's the thing that I would say with that. If you do take trekking poles and you're using it to, well, I guess it's the little stingers that have to get in you for it to cause the itch. It's not the actual part of the plant. So it's not like an oil like the rest of these. Okay. There it is. See, I just had to talk it through.
Yeah.
I guess we can go back. Did you have anything else on the sting and nettles? Or
that's really the main things about those. I mean, yeah. The other thing for prevention, which this one is going to be the one that comes up on all these that we talk about. But the other thing for prevention is like long pants and long sleeves, right? Like, right. So the less of your skin that's exposed, the less chance that
you're going to touch it or brush it.
Your skin exposed to it. Now, the only thing that I would say specifically about the stinging nettles, though, depending on the fabric of those long sleeves or long pants, I don't know this 100%, but I am assuming that those nettles might be able to go through some really thin fabric. So,
yeah.
I mean, even with long pants and long sleeves on, I probably would still try to avoid coming into contact.
Right.
You know,
it's a protection. It's not a 100% guarantee you're not going to get it.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, but yeah, so that's basically okay. All we can move on to the next one if you want to move on to the next one.
Yeah. I just go to the top of the list here with poison ivy. That's probably the most common one that we have around us.
That's the big one. Yeah, right.
That's the big one. It's throughout the entire United States, so that's not just Michigan, but anywhere you go, people's backyards, forests, beaches, anywhere you can go, there can be poison ivy there. You've all heard the leaves of three, let it be. It's a shinier, I almost describe it as like a little Michigan-shaped leaf because it's got the little thumb.
It's got the little thumb.
So, but if it's got three leaves and it's got like one little jute off the side, then that could potentially be poison ivy. Just let it sit. I guess in the fall and the spring, it often has a reddish hint to it. I've never seen that.
One of those things, like, I have always heard about poison ivy is like the shiny leaves because of the oil, right? Like, so that part makes sense to me. The leaves of three, leave it be. That one I get. I don't love that phrase. I mean, it's the common phrase. I don't love it because like lots of stuff have three leaves.
Right.
I feel like I come across a lot of stuff out there that has three leaves. So like, to me, that doesn't specifically help me. I just try to avoid anything that's green and shiny leaf looking, like, I'm not super good at identifying this stuff. So it's like, I try to not come into contact with anything. But I have also heard that like green color with a reddish tint.
Yeah.
I don't know. Either I have never seen it or I don't know what I'm looking at, or maybe I have a little bit of color blindness or something. I don't know. I don't feel like I've ever seen this reddish tint that everybody talks about.
Right. Yeah, I haven't either. I've seen very, very bright, shiny green. Like, right. That's what I've seen.
That's what I've seen.
But
which is not to say that that reddish tint doesn't exist. That is just not my experience with
it. And I guess maybe it could have that reddish tint in a drier climate or a warmer climate, because it's not just here. You know, it's not just in Michigan. It's throughout the entire United States and world. So,
right.
One thing with this one, it grows as a vine or ground cover type thing. So it's pretty much attached to something else. Like it's going to be kind of hidden within the rest of nature. So it does make it a little bit harder to find. And my wife is really good at picking it out. I am not. So
I am not, but like, I have also never had like the poison ivy rash before.
Okay.
I honestly halfway wonder, because like, there are people out there that are not susceptible to that oil.
Yeah.
I really halfway wonder, like, I'm not going out there to test this theory.
Right.
Because, like, I'm not willing to, like... You don't want
it. I've had bad reactions to poison ivy. It's not good.
Yeah, no, that's what I hear. But, and, I mean, I have spent a lot of my life in the woods in some capacity or another. Like, as a kid, we played in the woods all the time. As an adult, we're doing all this stuff out in the woods. Mm-hmm. I feel like I for sure have been exposed to it. I have never had the rash, so...
Right.
I don't know if I'm not susceptible to it or if I've just been lucky for 45 years.
I mean, it's possible. It's obviously possible that you're not allergic to it. There are people out there there's people that don't have sinus allergies or, you know, right. seasonal allergies, things like that. I used to be one of them, and then I hit turn 30. like Sean said, when you do come in contact with poison ivy, it's going to cause an itchy. I didn't have blisters, but I had a very, very bad, very itchy rash from the, I'm not even going to pronounce that oil, urushiol, something
right.
like that.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce that either.
but I don't know if the blisters come from leaving the oil on too long, like you don't wash it off quick enough, or if it comes from you're itching it so bad that you're spreading it. Type of a thing, and it's irritating and more causing the blisters. I don't know how that worked out. I did not get into
We're not doctors, right? Like, right, this is right. not like that type of podcast, but yeah, I mean you're exactly right. Like that, I mean, talking about the blisters and the rash and the itchiness and all the things, like you said, lasts for freaking forever. You can't get rid of it once you have it. Now, one thing that I did want to mention, so I was talking to my husband about this topic before we started recording. He was telling me one thing that it would be good to bring up about this is, like, it is contact with the oil that is the problem, right? Which we've already said, and people kind of like intuitively know. But one of the things he said that I should probably mention on this is, once that oil is gone, right? Like that rash and those blisters or whatever, that's going to last for a while. It's not like you have that oil on your skin the entire time. Right. So let's say you, Mike, have that itchy rash, even with like blisters that might be like having secretions coming out of them, let's say.
Right.
If I touch that, that is not going to get me the rash.
Right.
Like the rash itself is not contagious. It is specifically the oil. That is what is causing the problem.
Yeah, it's not like the blisters that I'm growing would be creating that oil.
Correct.
Again.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
It's non-transferable unless you were to come in contact with each other before you wash the oil off.
Right. Like you've got the oil on your hand, I shake your hand, now I've got the oil on my hand. It is the oil specifically that is the problem. So let's talk about that for a minute, because you kind of mentioned it, but let's talk about it. So you get the oil on you, or you think you've gotten the oil on you. What do you do?
Anything that you think has come in contact with that oil, you need to wash with soap and water pretty much right away, and or burn, not burn, but throw it away.
Right.
Don't continue to wear, if it's on your clothes, don't continue to wear those clothes until you've washed them. Do your best not to come in contact with those clothes. Wear gloves or something until you get them in the wash machine or you hand wash them, anything like that. And then your skin, definitely wash that part of your body before you. I don't know if taking a shower would be the best thing, or if you're going to potentially spread the oil through the rest of your body.
Right.
That I don't know. Oil and water don't mix, so I have no idea. So,
well, and let's talk about that for a minute, because we're saying soap and water, right? We've also talked about how it's dirty out in the backcountry, and you don't have all the amenities. So, like, in your daily life, if you come in contact with it.
Soap and water.
Okay, soap and water, right? What do you do out in the backcountry? I don't know about alcohol pads, so I'm not going to specifically recommend it. But what I am going to recommend, a coworker of mine found at a outdoor supply type place, little backpacking sheets of soap. So little soap, think like a Listerine strip type thing.
Yeah.
But like,
I've seen those. Yeah.
So I have put those in my backpack. Okay. And we now have those for what I am going to say is like emergency use. Like, I do not feel like you and I are going to use them all the time. We've got hand sanitizer for like when we're trying to eat and things like that. Plus, water is one of those things where it's like kind of a hot commodity when you're out on the trail. You might not have ready access to a lot of water.
Right.
So I don't know as though we're going to want to wash our hands every time, you know, like every 20 minutes with this, like these little soap sheets or whatever. But I do think it's good to have in our pack. I didn't even know that that was a thing you could buy. And especially for this type of situation where time is of the essence, getting the oil off your skin faster is best. I could see this being a great way to help facilitate that.
Yeah, mine, I did look at my notes for what happens when you are exposed. Alcohol wipes is an acceptable thing to use for poison ivy exposure. Mm. So if you have alcohol wipes, that's a great thing to obviously keep on you for cleanup for food, you know, eating and all that kind of stuff, general cleanup. But then also if you're exposed to any kind of poison ivy.
It must help break down that oil or something, huh?
I'm guessing
what the thought behind that is.
Definitely put that alcohol wipe right into your trash and don't touch it again, just in case. Right.
Well, so so then that kind of nicely segues into my next thing. So, like, the problem with poison ivy or some of these quote-unquote poison plants that we're going to talk about, it don't even have to get directly on your skin. Well, I mean, it does eventually have to get directly on your skin, but, like, let's say you brush up against it and you get some of the oil on your pants.
Mm-hmm.
That oil is going to stay there for a hot minute.
Then later
you brush up against your pants, now it's on your skin. So, like, that's the other problem with poison ivy and some of these other ones that we're going to talk about is, like, that oil is easily transmittable.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, if it's on your pants or let's say your pack brushes up against it, something like that.
Sure.
And then your arm touches it, and then now you've got it on your arm. Then you're going to be real confused as to where you got it, you know?
Right. Or maybe let's pretend it is your pack, right? So that's on your back. Your pack rubbed up against it. It's something you didn't even see. Your pack rubs up against it. You don't even know to be careful when you're getting into your pack the next time.
Yep.
Like, not great. So, yeah, I mean, definitely have your head on a swivel while you're out there being on the lookout for this sort of stuff. Avoid it at all costs.
See, that's why
it's
going to
cause some problems. Well, yeah, right. So then how do you prevent it, right? Like, that's going to be the next thing. How do you prevent coming in contact with it?
I mean, the prevention that I have is long pants, long sleeves.
Right.
Neck gaiter. And things when you're in the, if you got any kind of binds or anything like that hanging down that you might come in contact with, I guess a neck gaiter might help. And avoid brushing up against plants.
Right. I mean, your notes are the same as my notes. Long sleeve, long pants. Keeping in mind that long sleeves and long pants are going to keep it off you for right now.
Right.
Prevention is the best method. Don't rub up against it. So, like,
that's the
know
thing
what
is,
it looks like, be able to identify it. That's the best way, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, and then it says avoid brushing up against plants, stay in the center of the trail, which we've talked about with, you know, all of our trail etiquette and, like, leave no trace type of stuff. Anyway, but sometimes the center of the trail has overgrowth on it, so can't always prevent touching plants. So,
oh, 100%. Right. So, well, and here's the other thing. I mean, just to mention, I guess, while we're on the topic,
we've talked about, you know, some people take their pets out there with them, right? Like, you're out there hiking with your dog. What if your freaking dog gets into it? And then you pet your dog, and now you've got the oil transferred to you via your dog.
Yeah.
I mean, really, visual identification is the best
prevention. Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, well, you know.
And then, so that I guess, could go into hiking with your dog etiquette, but don't loose leash your dog. Or don't, not loose leash, but don't off leash your dog.
Yeah,
on the trails, because some of these, well, all of these things, if they eat them, then it's definitely not good news for your dog that way too. And we all know dogs love to chew on vegetation for some reason.
For sure.
So,
yeah. So that's my extent for.
That's kind of beating poison ivy with a dead with a stick there dirt to death. However, right. I want to say that. The next one is very, very similar to poison ivy, poison oak. It's mostly in the western UP, but I do know that we have it in Michigan. It looks like an oak leaf, an oak tree leaf, and it still has leaves of three, but it's got more of that oak leaf tree rather than the Michigan shaped leaf, rather not tree, but and that has that same oil as poison ivy. So it's I'm assuming it's a similar family. So basically the same prevention, same tips and tricks and how to prevent and how to take care of it after exposure too. Like it's all kind of the same. It's the same oil, same leaves of three type of thing, just different shape.
Yeah. My notes for poison oak are different shape, ditto the rest.
Right. Yeah. So, nailed it.
So yeah. I mean, I don't wanna re-say the same things we've already said. It's a different shape. It looks like an oak leaf. Aside from that, all the same things from poison ivy basically apply.
So we'll move on to the next one here. I've got poison sumac as my next one. Okay. That one's generally found in wetlands and swampy areas in the eastern United States. We are kind of eastern, considering we're in the eastern time zone. I do know that we have poison sumac in Michigan and around us. So that's something there. It grows as a tall shrub or a small tree. I've never seen this one personally. And it's got 7 to 13 leaflets arranged in pairs. So
I know I saw that and I'm like, yeah. By the time you get to 7 to 13, who's freaking counting? I mean, you know what I mean? It's got a bunch.
And
it's like 7 to 13. So it's like, okay, could be anywhere in there. So that's not a good one to go by. The other thing that I did come across though, that is helpful to like specifically identify this one is supposedly the stems of this plant are like a bright red color. And then it also said that the leaves people often describe as droopy looking. And again, I can't say that I've seen this one in person, so I don't necessarily have firsthand account on that, but that's the way it was described in a couple of places when I was looking, is like bright red and droopy looking leaves, whatever that means.
Yeah. I'm looking at a picture of it and it definitely looks like, I mean, the leaves, it's almost like a fern type leaf that comes out off of the tree, and then the leaves tend to, they're longer. So gravity takes over. So they definitely droop towards the ground. So I wouldn't necessarily say that it's the plant growing it that way. I think it's gravity.
Yeah.
So, but it, again, it's the same oil. It's just a more concentrated version of the oil. So it causes a bigger rash. Or a worse rash. So,
right. That's what I was going to say, is that supposedly this one is even worse than, if poison ivy is bad, this one's like ratcheted up a couple of notches because of how concentrated this oil supposedly is on this one.
Yep.
So this is one of those, like, you know, if poison ivy is like, oh, do your best not to touch it, this one's like, don't frickin' touch it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's yeah, it's more potent and just I've never seen the, I mean, I might have now looking at the picture. I may have seen it, just not knowing what it was. Glad I didn't get the reaction from that one, because if I'm allergic to poison ivy, then I'm definitely allergic to this one.
For so. Sure. Well, especially if it's the same oil, which I'll be honest, like until we started looking into this, like I knew that these were all like all had similar symptoms and similar things. I didn't realize it was literally the same oil.
Right.
Causing this for each of them. Like, I really did think that they were different. Turns out it's all the same thing. Which, I mean, it's kind of neither here nor there, depending, you know, hopefully you never run into it. And realistically, if you do get the rash, you're not going to be like, well, that's interesting, because this is the same oil as the other one. Like, no, realistically, nobody cares. It's just like, oh, I got this awful rash and it sucks.
Right.
But I did find it to be, like, from a nerdy aspect, like, oh. Well, that's good to know.
Right. It's from looking at it, seems more or less it's a regional version of the same thing, almost. Like,
right.
You know,
yeah, like, that's kind of, yes. Okay. That's a good way to put it. It does seem like it's kind of like, what part of the country are you in? Or what part of the world are you in, I suppose? And this is, you get what you get based on this, based on where you're at.
So, I mean, basically that hits that one, just because, like I said, it's the same, just a different look and a stronger oil, a more concentrated oil. So we'll move on now. This one is a different one that I have. It's wild parsnip. It is not the same oil. It is not the same rash. It is not the same reaction. Well, I guess we can...
Yeah, let's get into this one for a minute, because like this one's a nasty one. So yeah, so let's start with the description, I guess, if you've got a description.
Yeah, well, it's a taller flowering type bush or weed that
I know. Grows. I would say weed almost looking right. Like the one thing I saw somebody describe it in one spot as like a plant that resembles dill. For anybody that knows what a dill plant looks like, if that is helpful in any way. But like, because to me, dill looks like a weed, right? So like, it's all. Right.
Yeah, I've definitely seen this looking stuff too. Yeah, it does say that you find it along roadsides, fields, and other disturbed areas. So it's definitely something you see driving past it. You just don't think what it is. And most people don't walk past it to get the reaction. So, but yeah, it's a tallish weed, up to 5 feet is what it says. I think normally it's I've seen it around 3 to 4, maybe 2 to 4.
Sure. Yeah, I would say that's probably about what I've seen.
And it's got yellowish umbrella shaped flowers on it. And it says leaves look like celery or parsley, but like you're saying, it looks like a dill plant too. Like it kind of looks like that.
It's a weed, right? And I don't know of a better way to say that, but like it looks like a weed. It is a weed. Let's talk about why it's bad. Like, this one is a bad one.
So this one is bad, particularly in sunlight.
Yep.
It's the sap on this one.
Right.
Which is, I guess, an oil-ish type
substance. I mean, I guess, like adjacent to an oil, right? Like it's the secretion from the plant, but it's more of instead of oily, it's more of like a sap. So it's more like a sticky type substance.
Yeah, I mean, we've all dealt with like pine sap or maple leaf sap, something like that. This is a sap of the same sorts. But in the sunlight, it creates a wicked chemical burn.
Do you want to attempt that word? I'm sure you've got the same word written down that I do.
Nope.
Phytophotodermatitis is how I'm going to say it. Not sure that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Phytophotodermatitis. Okay. Sure.
So this sap is activated by sunlight.
Yep.
Like the bad part of it, the chemical burn part of it is activated by sunlight.
Yeah, seems like something that like James Bond or like something in the Mission Impossible movies that they would use to burn something.
Right. Like it's like that delayed burn, right? Because like, oh, you're in the woods. It's not sunny where you're at. You get some of the sap on you. You're walking through the trail. Suddenly you get to like a stretch where you're in the sun.
literal chemical burns. Like, yeah, it causes literal chemical burns.
Yeah, I just looked up the picture of the chemical burn, and it's not pretty.
No.
Does not look fun.
Mm-mm. No, it's gross. I mean, it, gross, and I don't have firsthand experience, but I assume painful.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're talking chemical burn.
Right, yeah. I can't imagine that's fun any time.
No. But here is where your, like, long sleeves and long pants really are going to help you. Like, that's going to keep that sap off your skin. Once it's on your clothes, it's not going to... you know how, like, oil is, like, really easily transmittable? The sap is less easily transmittable once it's, like, stuck to something.
Right. Yeah, well, and I don't know if it reacts to the clothing in sunlight like it would to your skin. You know what I mean? Like, it can't cause blisters on your clothes. I didn't look that up, but I would much rather have that reaction on my clothing than on my skin, though, anyway.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, okay, let's pretend... I guess I didn't specifically look up to see what it does to your clothing because that wasn't really my concern. But let's pretend it gets activated and causes some sort of chemical burn on your clothes. Well, your clothes are easy to take off and your clothes are easy to replace. Your skin, less easy to take off and less easy to replace.
Yeah. I mean, we all saw how hard it was in the movie Face Off.
Right.
So.
Teams of doctors.
Right. So. Yeah, so the avoidance tip on that one is don't touch, especially on sunny days, and wash as soon as possible if you do touch it, because avoiding the sun is impossible, right, especially if you're outside.
Right. So,
but yeah, that one's a bad one. I did not particularly know about that one, but as soon as I looked up the picture of the plant and everything, I definitely know that I've seen it. And it's definitely there, so look out for that one. The last one on this part of the list is the giant hogweed. This one is rare in Michigan, but it's increasing as it's an invasive species of plant. And this one gets quite big. It can get up to 14 feet tall is what I am looking at. And it grows like a little tree. It's a weird looking thing, and it's got these, I mean, kind of pretty white flowers on them.
So I've heard the flowers described as similar to Queen's Anne's lace, which, so if anybody knows what Queen's Anne's lace looks like, actually fairly pretty. Like, I actually think that they're for a weed flower, they're a fairly pretty flower. So if you're at all familiar with what Queen's Anne's lace looks like, these look like that. They're that same umbrella shape, but they're, like, way bigger is what I've heard.
Yeah, the leaves on this thing are pretty massive looking. It looks like a traditional, what I'm going to consider a traditional weed leaf. Like, it's the spiny little bastards. But yeah,
serrated.
Serrated, there you go. But like I said, they're generally 6 to 8 feet tall, but they've been measured up to 14 feet tall. With the large white flower clusters, purple blotches on the stem, damn dogs, but purple blotches on the stems there. So that's an easier way to pick it out. But, if you see a tall plant with white, umbrella shaped flowers on them, then stay the hell away from it. I mean, it looks like something out of Jurassic Park almost. Like, if it looks like it does.
Exactly what I was going to say. It looks like something from, like, the Jurassic period. Like, it's this giant ass weed thing with these oversized flowers.
Right. If it looks like it doesn't belong in our time period, then don't touch it.
Right. But if you do touch it, I was just going to get into it. Like,
yeah. If you do touch it, it's the sap again on this one that causes severe skin burns. Again, just like the other one, when exposed to sunlight. So something with this sap is UV activated, or something in the sunlight that activates it. So, the avoidance tip on this one says report sightings, never, all caps, never touch, treat it like a hazardous material. So, So this one, like, if you see this damn thing, don't go up and be like, hey, I want to get my picture taken with it. It's not a good one to go up next to.
Well, so to just kind of like add on to what you're saying about like never touch it, in like the tips and tricks that I found in a couple of spots, it even said if it is dead looking or, you know, dried and dead looking, still don't touch it. Like, yeah. So even if it's a dead looking version of this plant, still don't touch it. It's still got this sap. You can still get it on you at that point. And then the other thing that I have read about this, so like same thing about like washing it off as soon as possible type thing. But this one said to me, wash it off, but then still avoid sunlight for 2 days.
Oh, no shit. I didn't see that part of it. Yeah, that did not come up in my research. So, yeah.
So this seems pretty wicked
for a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, if it was around in the Jurassic period, then don't touch it.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So, that's all I've got on that one. I mean, like I said, we you can't really put a visual, out there on a audio medium. So,
right.
We can put pictures on the website and whatnot, but, other than that, I mean, just, yeah, Google these things, look them up, download a picture, save a picture of them, take them with you when you're out on the trail. And that way, if you see something if it looks suspicious, just look at it and look it up and see what it is. So,
yeah. Can I circle back to the ones with the oils for a minute? Just because, yeah. I do have something in my notes that I forgot to mention earlier when we were talking about those. One of the things that I would like to make sure that I say, not from my own personal experience, but I know people that have done this. Do not burn
your poison ivies,
poison oak, poison sumacs too. Like, I know sometimes when we're out in the backcountry, you're kind of looking for like, what can you set on fire, right, to make a fire? Don't pick these things to burn. Cause like you can actually inhale that oil too.
Yep.
Which causes all sorts of problems if you do that. Yeah, so I just noticed that on my notes that we never actually mentioned that one as part of that conversation. So I want to make sure that I get that in there. Absolutely. Do not burn this stuff.
Yeah. If you see a quick story on this, it's been years now, but, I had a buddy that had some, a little bit of property and had some trees come down in a storm. So they were sitting for a little bit, but I went and helped him chop them up and brought some of the wood home and had a fire that night with that wood. Well, the next day at work, I'm covered in poison ivy rashes on my arms from carrying this wood, and I burned it. Luckily, where I stand at my old fire pit in my yard, I always stood upwind of it, so it took the fumes and the smoke and everything away from me. But I put my neighbors in danger. Didn't know it, but I put my neighbors in danger at that point. So if you see when you're in the backcountry, they always say, don't cut any trees down. Just take anything that's fallen. Look around what you're picking up and see if it's laying in any of this stuff. And because if it's exposed to that oil, A, you don't want to touch it for one, because then you can get it on your hands, your arms, whatever. But then also you potentially burn it and ingest it. So
inhale
it.
Right. I want to make sure we got that in there before we move on to like the ingestibles of this, or the still don't ingest, but the things that you might.
I was going to say we're at 40 minutes. I mean, we could do the ingestibles as a separate episode almost.
Let's do that. I mean, if
you
we're,
at,
we're
at, okay.
Yeah, let's do that, because I got a few things and I feel like I'm going to have a few things to say. So maybe let's save those for a part two. We'll do like another part two episode.
Ooh, our first like we did to be with continued. Our,
like navigating.
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't we purposely split those to be separate.
Right.
This one is our first, I guess, unofficial to be continued.
There you go. We'll do that. We'll do the next episode in your podcast feed in a short 2 week period.
Right.
Same place you're getting this episode.
And we're not fancy to have a premium paywall subscription service to where you can listen to it early yet. So
to wait. But like if people want it, I mean, you know.
Are we worth it to you? Probably not. But
so yeah, let's do that. Let's carry that over to the next episode.
Sounds good.
So then I guess if that's what we've got, should we wrap up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you kind of just nailed it on the wrap up there with the, you know, don't burn it. Don't burn it. Don't touch it. And look it up. Do your own research. Type of a thing. If you see some of those, I guess one thing I will add, if you see the, hemlock, the giant hogweed, and the wild parsnip, they ask that you report that because they want to try to get rid of it. They're both invasive to the area, in Michigan anyway. I'm sure they're invasive everywhere. It's an invasive plant. So, if you see it, contact your local DNR station or call the DNR and report where you saw it so they can take appropriate measures to get rid of it.
Perfect. Good PSA. Yep. So with that having been said, if there are any plants that you feel like we should have mentioned and didn't, first, stay tuned for our next part two of this episode. But then also or other is feel free to reach out to us on our email. We love getting feedback. If there's something we should have mentioned and didn't, Mike and I certainly can't think of everything. So if you feel like we really had a blind spot and didn't hit something, or you have other tips and tricks on how to avoid some of these things, you can always reach us on our email, which is SeanMikeHike@gmail.com. You can reach us on most of the major socials at SeanMikeHike or directly through our website, which is SeanMikeHike.com. Please, as always, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening to this. And until next time,
go take a hike and stay away from the poison.
There you go. All right. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks. Thank you.